Welcome to Beyond the Divide, where we cut through the noise to uncover the truth that no matter our differences, we're all just people and we're united in a pursuit of a better tomorrow. A very common Christian theme is to tell our youth that you were saved for such a time as this. But what exactly does that mean? This particular quote comes from the book of Esther. And Esther was a young Jewish woman who was put into the harem of the king. And one day, the queen kind of ticked him off. She didn't come to him immediately when he called. And so he was pretty upset with her. And while he was really upset with her, and he kind of ends up getting drunk with his advisors. And they tell him, you know, she is setting an example for women all over, you know, the kingdom. And they are going to not, you know, bow to their husbands. They're going to rise up and they're just going to do whatever they want to. And so they convince him that he needs to get rid of the queen and choose a new one. So whatever happens, he divorces her. And she's no longer the queen. So then they're like, okay, you need to choose a new queen and you're going to do it from your harem. And so these girls and young women in the harem, they are given 1 year to kind of prepare and, you know, they're pampered and they're made beautiful. And then they go before the king, and he is supposed to pick the one that makes him the happiest and make her his queen. So Esther goes before the king, and she was orphaned as a young child. She was raised by her cousin, Mordecai, and he tells her not to reveal to anyone that she's Jewish. And so she doesn't. No one knows. And he is like one of the king's scribes. And so he's kind of there in the palace and he knows what's going on. And so Esther, it comes time for it to be her turn to go before the king. And the king falls in love with her. And he decides that he's going to make her his queen. And so Esther is made the queen. And there is one of the king's advisors. And he is kind of on a power trip and he's going around to, you know, people and he's making them bow to him and things like that. And Mordecai refuses to bow to him because Mordecai, you know, he's like, God is the only one that I will bow to, God and my king, because, you know, the king was put in place by God. And so this advisor goes to the king and he starts making up all these stories about the Jewish people and how they're refusing to bow to him and they're refusing to accept that, you know, he is a principal advisor of the king and he deserves their respect and things like this. So he convinces the king that the Jewish people need to be gotten rid of. And so when this happens, Mordecai finds out about this plot to kind of kill off all of the Jewish people. And he goes to Esther and he says, you have to go to the king now. And you have to tell him that you are Jewish. And you have to save our people from extinction because he's going to wipe us all out. And so she is very afraid. And Mordecai says, you were saved for such a time as this. This is exactly why you're here. It's exactly why the king, you know, was made to fall in love with you. You must go to him. And so she, after kind of a long night of wrestling with her feelings and praying and things, she decides she's going to go ahead and she's going to go to the king and she's going to tell him that she's Jewish. And so she does. She goes to the king. She reveals that she's Jewish. And he's like, you can't be Jewish because I've decreed that all of the Jewish people were going to be put to death. And she basically convinces him to remove the decree that he's put out, because the Jewish people are good and they're kind and they're faithful, and they're not any of these things that his advisors are telling him. And he believes her because of the type of woman that she is. And he's like, there can not be any way possible that someone so good and so pure could come from a population of people who are so, you know, depraved and so disrespectful and, you know, just all of these things that his advisors have been telling him. So for Esther, she was saved to save her people from extinction. And as we look through other parts of the Bible, these specific words aren't used, but it's kind of a recurring theme. You know, every prophet, every shepherd, every young man and young woman that God uses to bring about his designs on the earth is basically kind of falls under this being saved for that exact time. And as we look around us at the state of the world today, we have war and we have poverty and we have governments collapsing. There's riots, there's civil wars, there's starvation, there's fascism, there's racism, there's anti-Semitism. It's easy to see why so many Christian believers feel that we are on the razor-thin edge of the end and the return of Jesus. And his return will end all conflicts, and it will transform the world and everyone in it into a state of paradise for an entire millennia before the final judgment. And so for just a minute, I want to jump back to another point in time when conditions on the earth were similar, not exactly the same, but similar. And the people there were waiting for a savior to come and deliver them from the oppression that they were under. Now, at this time, on the European continent, the Roman Empire had definitely grown into an empire. They had conquered most of Europe. They were ruling over multiple populations of people, including Jewish populations. So here again, we have the Jewish people who are crying out to God for deliverance from their Roman oppressors. And they were heavily taxed and they were under very strict control, almost like martial law would be in America if that were enacted. There were soldiers that were assigned to every single city, and they kept a really tight rein on the people. And the people were very poor and they were very weary. So they're praying and they're crying out for a Messiah that would come and basically storm the gates and free them from this Roman control. Okay, so now we have conditions that are ripe for a Messiah to come and to save them. But when Jesus Christ enters the scene, he is not anything like what they're expecting. And this is one of the major ways that Christianity and Judaism differ. We have a difference of opinion on who Jesus Christ was. As Christians who follow the teachings of Jesus Christ, we believe that he was that promised Messiah that they were crying out for. But the people at this time, they were expecting a great military leader. And he was just going to come in and he was going to save them. And Jesus came and he was a great spiritual leader. So you can see why they didn't recognize him or who he was. And we also have other elements that are at play in that the leaders of the Jewish people, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they're like the elite of the elite. And they were divided on how the people should worship and live their lives. So one group is very, very traditional. And they are like, you follow the letter to the letter of the law. You go to synagogue every single week. You know, read through, you cleanse yourself, you do all of these things exactly as the Torah says. And then you have another group that's a lot more progressive. And they are, you know, not wanting to lose their elite status And so they kind of placate the Romans and they play along and they do whatever they need to do so that they are kind of left alone and left up on their pedestal. So during this time of confusion from their leaders and turmoil, those people who were actively seeking God and seeking peace and faith, they recognized Jesus. They recognized him as a great teacher and a rabbi, and they followed him and they were baptized into his church. And they did everything that they could to help spread his teachings. So here we have an example of people who were saved for such a time as this. They were put on the earth at that exact time so that they could become followers of Jesus and begin the organization of his church upon the earth. And this wasn't an easy thing for them to do. They were leaving behind generations of Jewish teachings, and they were following behind a man who was being shamed and ridiculed by their leaders. And they were going against the people that they grew up with, their spiritual leaders, their friends, their families, and they were following a man who was out there claiming to be more than what he appeared to be. Now we know, because of the recounting of the miracles of Jesus Christ in the New Testament, that he was indeed more than he appeared to be. And as he was performing these miracles, the people that were following him, the group was growing larger and larger. And this scared the Jewish leaders really bad because they were losing control of the people. And here is Jesus telling the people the truth of what their leaders were doing. And they were just constantly conspiring together to figure out a way to discredit him so that they wouldn't lose their control over the people. Now, as we all know, they eventually convince the people that Jesus is a really bad guy. And they believe he is so bad that when Pontius Pilate allows them to choose between releasing a prisoner who is a murderer and a rapist and a thief and releasing Jesus Christ, they choose to release the murderer. So we all know how the story ends. Jesus is crucified, and on the third day, he rises from the tomb as a resurrected being. He holds power over the grave and the promise that we can all be saved if we have faith and follow his teachings. But it's not enough to simply follow his teachings. The common theme of today is that it doesn't really matter what I do because I'm saved by the cross. But this is not enough. We have to live our lives in the best possible way, and we have to share the truths of Jesus Christ that we have come to know. We must do everything we possibly can to be spiritual people, and then, and only then, will the mercy of the cross make up the difference. We cannot simply go about our lives and do whatever we want to do, expecting that we will then be saved. And I'm not saying that you can't ever mess up, because we all do every single day. And that's okay. But if we make a pact with ourselves and with our faith and with God that we will be better today than we were yesterday, then that is enough. But we have to put down the carnal nature of man, and we have to learn to control our desires and our feelings and our emotions. And we have to truly follow our faith every single day. Not just on Sunday, when it's common for people to attend worship services, but every single day. And we can bring others to a knowledge of Jesus Christ simply by how we live our lives. We were saved for such a time as this. And whether you believe that these are the final scenes before the return of Christ or not, I think we can all agree that the world that we live in is not the world we want our children and our grandchildren to live in. We live in a world full of depravity and instant gratification. It's full of greed, it's full of hate, and our society feels like it's increasingly tilting toward short-term highs and ethical erosion. We live in an era where technology and consumerism and cultural shifts have amplified both the depravity and the need for immediate rewards. And instant gratification isn't new. It's been around as long as humans have been around. We've always chased those dopamine hits. We've always chased the quick pleasures. But it's supercharged now through our ability to access our smartphones and our instant streaming. Like, kids nowadays don't even know what it was like to have to sit through commercials. For a 30-minute sitcom, you have to sit through 10 minutes of commercials. Or to have to wait for September to come around so that you could watch the new episodes, and you only got one new episode per week. They have no idea what that was like. They have to sit through a minute and a half of ads now on Amazon, and they're like, holy cow, this is insane. And the rise of instant gratification and how easy it is to get to, it's leading us to having reduced patience. We have poor decision making, and society as a whole is less tolerant of delay. On the depravity side, it's not just overt corruption or violence, it's subtle. And it's more of a moral confusion where good and evil blur together. My daughter calls it a gray area. You know, when you have, say, a movie with an antagonist who's not completely black and he's not completely white, he's gray. He's morally gray. And the fallout is real and it's compounding. Our society of instant gratification is eroding productivity and relationships. We're fostering impulse over control. Think like memory issues from social media overuse or struggling academically because you have a shortened attention span. That's what this is doing to you as a person and to society as a whole. You were saved to bring forth your light and your faith and your compassion during this exact moment in time. And God made sure that you would be born now because He knew that He could count on you to be a leader and to lead by example. You can do this. We can all do this. Be the change. Be the example. Be the light for others to follow and to find their faith. Fall has begun, the shift in the seasons, guys. Get out there. Enjoy some sunshine while it lasts. Strike up that conversation. Find the common thread with someone. And don't be afraid to scare those who've claimed power with your brilliant faith and your truth and your knowledge. You guys are so smart, so incredibly smart. God saved, truly saved His elite and His elect for a time such as this. Thanks for joining me, guys. Go out there and have a great day.